The following is the first Marine Aircraft Wing Tape historical interview. The interview is Lieutenant Colonel Lewis A. Gulling, 054140, United States Marine Corps. He is the executive officer of Prov Mag 39 at Quang Tri, Republic of Vietnam. The interviewer is Lance Corporal Robert Jed, was 234-0257, United States Marine Corps. This interview takes place at Da Nang Air Base, Republic of Vietnam, on 24 October 1968. The subject of this interview is the Khe Sanh Air Base during the period February 1968 through April 1968. This interview is classified secret and downgraded by higher authority.
This is Lieutenant Colonel Gulling speaking. And at the time that I speak about in the Khe Sanh environment, I was the commanding officer of HMM 364, a squadron of CH-46 Deltas. What I'd like to do this afternoon is record my impressions of how the Khe Sanh super gaggle, as we called it, came about. And then after going through a typical hop, I will pass on some of the handicaps that we encountered and how we helped to correct those. We started out on a good standard trip. The day would start with the taking of 8 aircraft, which was our normal complement that we were instructed to send north, and would depart the Phu Bai area. As you're probably well aware, this occurred during the monsoon season, and the weather was a factor against us. A couple of times starting out, we tried to go IFR to Quang Tri, but the fact of 8 aircraft trying to leave and pretty well bunched up, the air control facilities were not capable of handling us in that fashion. So eventually it evolved to where the 8 aircraft would take off about 50% of the time, would be special VFR, and depart from Phu Bai in 2 flights of 4, head down the bay and then on up the coastal area. Upon reaching east of Quang Tri, then we'd fly in low level into the airfield at Quang Tri itself. The progress of getting from Phu Bai to Quang Tri, in my estimation, deserves a lot of praise to the pilots that flew this. There were many days that we flew up there in conditions of weather between 100 and 200 feet and less than a quarter mile visibility. But yet in the total time, the time span of about 2 months, at no time did we ever have any problems or any planes get lost in proceeding on up to Quang Tri. Upon arriving at Quang Tri, we would shut down and go into the COC bunker and get our briefing for the day. The briefing, of course, always carried points we would be resupplying, along with the other additional information as to what would take place afterwards in the way of bringing out medevacs, transferring of personnel, passengers, and hauling mail and resupply. Upon receiving the briefing then, we would be in a standby status, awaiting the signal to launch the super gaggle. The super gaggle itself was brought about by the fact that Khe Sanh became untenable as far as keeping helicopters there to resupply the hills from Khe Sanh itself. After we had lost X amount of aircraft there, mainly the helicopters were remaining overnight, it became imperative that the hills could only be resupplied by a base further back. Quang Tri at this time was the furthest base forward that would keep helicopters there at all times. So 364 picked up the job of being the main resupplier of the hills with additional support from 262. Of course, there were also other units involved in this, but we're covering only the 364 aspect at this time. After getting the brief and getting the time to go, we usually had about 1 hour before we'd be LR was to be on top of one of the hills. Okay, all this had been passed out earlier by classified message. We would go ahead and take our flight, and upon receiving the target for the day, would rebrief the flight on how we would get there and man aircraft. From there, we would proceed on up to Dong Ha, and in many times, the weather here again was, we're talking about weather of 200 feet and a half mile. Follow the highway to Dong Ha, pick up our external loads, and proceed out towards Khe Sanh. It was originally intended to where each aircraft would be giving radar control, but this soon proved highly impractical because the radar facilities were not capable of handling us in those great numbers for the short time period that we were allocated before we would be joined up over Quezon to make the LR. So we evolved there that all they would do is scan the section of the sky that we were going out in, and if they saw no bogeys, we just climbed out on our own. Normally speaking, we would go out with the idea of possibly about 6,500 feet, maybe 7,000, that we would break out on top and proceed to Quezon. The TACA Airborne would always call back the weather before we would take off, so we had a rough idea about where we would break out. Now, there was a weather phenomena that took place in the Quezon area, it being mountainous country. A lot of times, the base itself of Quezon would be obscured the total time that we would be out there and resupplying the hills. The hills themselves would break out into clear weather, and at which time we would be fully capable of working VFR in the hills where Quezon itself was IFR. Upon breaking out on IFR on top, we'd proceed on out to Quezon and orbit in that area. As soon as we joined up the total flight, we went ahead and passed the word to the TACA we were joined. Then he in turn started the close air support. Close air support normally consisted of anywhere from 2 to 4 flights of fixed wing, and they either hit pre-brief targets or targets of opportunity as pointed out by either the TACA or the FAC on the ground if there was one available. Upon the completion of their close air support mission, and the smoke planes would come in, or smoke plane, and he would put smoke to help guard so that our flight could be made in there in as much secrecy as possible. During the entire time that we would be up there, none of the names of the places we were going to land were supposed to have been broadcast in the air. Everything was supposed to be done with code words. But for some unknown reason, this didn't seem to work out too good, because invariably somebody would arrive, either the fixed wing, sometimes even the helicopters, where they were had either forgotten or were unsure of the code word of the day, and it would come out in plain English as to where we're going to land, and the answer would be given in plain English, and there went any possible secrecy that we had working for us. When the smoke plane began its run, that's when the word was passed on the air for the super gaggle or the flight of helicopters to proceed on in and make their landing. At this time, the flight leader would head for the zone in a trail formation, and the landings would be made either singular landings, depending on the LZs, or expanding to as high as 4 landings at a time. It originally started out to where each aircraft would go in separately to all the hills, but we discovered that about the time the 3rd or 4th aircraft would get in, then the mortars would start to hit, because by then the enemy would react, and they would be putting the mortars in into the areas of the LZs. This caused us, of course, to make a slight change of tactics where it was possible. And I'm talking especially now about 881 South, where we requested that the people on the ground provide us with additional LZs so that we could then go in into waves. And that is how 881 South, then we went into what we called our wave formation, where we'd go down in column and everybody make a right turn at the same time and drop off 4 loads at a time. This precluded anybody getting into the zone or staying in the zone for any great length of time, and also it also precluded utilizing the zone for any great period of time. And we think that that had a big part in the fact that towards the end we received a lot less mortar fire while we were actually dropping off the loads. At this time then, everybody would climb back out, head back for Quezon, and then carry out the remaining work that was to be done on this flight. At conclusion of that, we would proceed back to Quang Tri, shut down, and await for the second resupply, which normally we resupplied 2 hills in 1 day. That was on the way back then. We would split up the flight usually. 4 aircraft would head for Dong Ha, 4 aircraft would head for Quang Tri. We'd be VFR on top. We'd call in and request radar-controlled approaches to either Quang Tri or Dong Ha, and be back in the chocks in usually about 1 hour and 45 minutes after takeoff. We would then await for the LR, of the second lift of the day. Now, some of the things we ran into that I think deserves note, one of the biggest drawbacks that we had was our lack of qualified helicopter aircraft commanders. This was undoubtedly some of the most exacting and harrowing flying that I've ever done in my flight career. Knowing this, I knew it would be impossible to take a junior officer and a junior aviator, and with only minimum time, and allow him to fly as an aircraft commander. Having brought the squadron overseas at the time, I had brought a full complement of helicopter aircraft commanders. But in the 2.5 months from my arrival in squadron to the commencement of Super Gaggle, we had lost some of our hacks to other squadrons to fulfill shipboard commitments, battle losses, and other assorted positions. So consequently, we had a total of 10 helicopter aircraft commanders that we could draw on at one time. When you only have 10 to start with, you use 8 every day, plus figuring one on possible R&R, or sick, lame, lazy, you can see that it was almost a continuous day's work just to go on Super Gaggle. It worked out to where we usually had about 4 days on and 1 day off to be back in the squadron, not necessarily a day off per se, but at least flying in another area or catching up in your paperwork. About midway through the caisson era, two more of our hacks had accumulated enough time, and we thoroughly screened, and we decided that these two would be capable of fitting into our program. So towards the end then, we actually had 12 that was leading the flight, or not leading the flights, but 12 being in the flights to help carry the load. Okay, as previously discussed, air control facilities. The air control facilities were totally inadequate to try and handle 8 aircraft going IFR from Fubai to Quang Tri. The time delay would be so great that it was just an impossible situation to fly that way. Again, trying to get a individual radar climb out, once again, would so saturate the facilities that they would that we could never make our LR time if we had to rely on that. So normally speaking, we just headed out on a heading and requested the radar to monitor us. And of course, if they had any bogeys, to call them out, and that'd be all we could do. The aircraft, normally speaking, had about a 30-second interval from the time they left Dong Ha to go out through the overcast. It was just fly heading and climb on out until you got on top, and of course, once on top, called, and at this time, called VFR on top so that those following through the clouds would not have to worry about you. Okay, another little quick notice here on one of the handicaps that I considered bad at the time was some of the equipment we used. We had a continual problem with shortage of nets and bad nets. Now, the shortage of nets, when we would go into these hills, the only way that we were able to continue on and haul supplies in was we'd have to go into the hills, and the last man in was always responsible for bringing out the nets. Occasionally, we'd have both nets and medevacs, and it would be 2 loads worth in the last 2 men. The next to last would get the nets because they were the fastest. The last man had to pick up the medevacs. But we were so critical on nets that every day we had to expose the helicopter anywhere as 5 to 10 to as high as 15 seconds extra in hot zones because of a shortage of nets. I think that was a condition that should and could be remedied if we ever have to go through this situation again in the future. The other complaint on nets is that we had quite a few nets that broke while in transit or in flight. It appeared as though these same nets had been used for considerable lengths of time. And of course, during the rainy season, I don't care what the material of the net is, sooner or later it's going to cause deterioration and break. We had, I can't really give a percentage, but I know my own personal experience, I lost 2 loads on the way out there just because the net broke. There was no trouble with the hook. The hook on the 46 is a very good hook. And normally speaking, the rest of it was okay, except the net itself would break, you lost your load. It just didn't seem right, the fact that you would expose yourself to all the dangers of climbing out through the overcast with a sling underneath, flying out to caisson, and in some place while he was orbiting caisson, have your load fall out because the net broke. Same thing as far as, and also with nets, while on this subject, we hauled quite a bit of mail from Dong Ha to caisson and the surrounding hills, and there were several packages of mail was lost for the same reason. It is my firm conviction that mail should never be hauled externally. The chances of losing it seems to be much greater, and consequently I think that all mail should be hauled internally. Now we reach a point where going into a hot zone as to how long you can stay there to kick out the mail. The best solution that I can think of there is to give each aircraft X amount of mail, so that while the crew chief or the gunners, whoever's responsible for it, as soon as you get in the area of the zone, he can push it right out the hell hole, the same place that he drops out the, watches out for the load being pickled off, and the mail can get delivered that way. Going along here also, another handicap we ran into out there, which constantly had me in a worry, was keeping track of the passengers. Many a times we go in the hot zone, and the radio operator would tell us ahead of time we have two passengers to go back to Khe Sanh or three passengers back to Quang Tri. You'd land, take back off, ask the crew chief, did we get our three passengers aboard? And his answer would be, no, sir, we have six passengers aboard. You'd have to sit back here and you'd ask the three extra where they were heading, and they were going to some other completely different zone that you had no intention of going that general direction. The passenger control was really bad, and although we never lost any aircraft, I always had that fear that if we would have lost one, I'm afraid the manifest would have been awfully tough to straighten out. It's a tough situation. There's been that gripe in helicopters for as long as I've been flying them, of trying to keep track of the passengers that's right in your helicopter, especially out in the field. This is something that would have to be worked out. You try and keep the best track you can to make sure, call ahead of time the guy on the radio and say, make him ascertain that if he said three passengers, all it was going to get on. But it appeared as though any time a helicopter got in that zone, it always seemed like there were some extra people had to go someplace else, and they just got on any helicopter that showed up. In closing, I would like to say at this time that I'm afraid the Marine Corps is making another mistake with their Vandergrift combat base. Having flown out in the general area, it is much more confined than Khe Sanh was. Khe Sanh was bad enough, but at least Khe Sanh was up on a plateau and not surrounded closely by mountains. Vandergrift itself, though, is oriented in one direction, north and south. It is ringed by the hills on three sides, and I don't think that we'll ever be able to get an instrument let down into Vandergrift where one can feel safe while executing it. Here again, we've got outlying bases sticking up in the clouds. There's a possibility, as explained before, the weather phenomena seemed to break from Khe Sanh to the west. But there was many, many times for weeks at a time we never saw the ground beneath us from Dong Ha to Khe Sanh. Now with Vandergrift there, which is approximately 8 miles east of Khe Sanh, and their outlying hills that they've got, I'm afraid there's going to be times as high as 10 days or 2 weeks when there'll be absolutely no resupply to the higher hills around there. Vandergrift base itself, I don't think there'll be such long periods you won't get a helicopter in there. But remember, we had a lot of fixed-wing assist at Khe Sanh. And I just can't see where the fixed wing is going to be able to make a safe approach and landing at Vandergrift. I do think accessibility to Vandergrift might be a little easier from a helicopter viewpoint, because I think most of the time that at least the road will be open from Dong Ha, or at least the area flying over using the road as a navigational aid, flying up the road through the rock pile and past the rock pile and then on into Vandergrift. I think the helicopters most of the time will be able to get in there, and when I say most of the time, I mean there shouldn't be any times over, say, 2 to 3 days at a time when a helicopter can't get through there. In closing, I'd like to say that the Khe Sanh experience, as previously stated, was some of the most exacting and demanding flying I've ever been to. Yet, I enjoyed it. It was a very rewarding experience, and I'm extremely proud of the people that participated in it.